again, everyone, and welcome to another fun-filled episode of Dead Pit Horror Talk Radio. I am the Creepy Kentuckian.
And I am Uncle Bill, and it looks to me as if fall is approaching. Yeah. The leaves are starting to fall.
It's getting a little chilly out.
That's right. It's getting to be almost to approach October, which, as you know, is our favorite month.
Yeah, and we're going to be hard at work in the month of October. And, you know, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, we should have some amazing interviews and possibly an amazing roundtable discussion very shortly. But for right now, on this week's edition of Dead Pit Radio, we've got an interview with independent horror filmmaker Patrick Ray.
Yeah, he's on our list of who to watch for, definitely, because...
Yeah, not on the shit list, which is another list.
I know he's got a feature film out that he just finished called The Empty Acre. Yeah. And we look forward to seeing that. But we've watched a lot of his short films, and that's mainly what we're going to be talking about.
Yeah, and if you haven't had a chance to check out any of his stuff, I think you can go to CNOReality.com.
That's right.
And you can check it out there.
That's Patrick Ray, folks. He'll be on a little bit later. And we have a few news topics to get to. Some really interesting stuff, actually. But in addition to that, we have DVD reviews. I know that we're talking about a J.R. Bookwalter film from 1995.
A self-proclaimed cult classic that I'm not aware of.
The Sandman, folks. Mm-hmm.
We've got a 1962 Mexican supernatural thriller from Shano Ureta, which is titled The Witch's Mirror.
Yeah, and we also have another one from our good pals at Tartan Asia Extreme. This one's directed by Kelvin Tong.
Mm-hmm. The Tong and Death Grip.
And, you know, it's another Japanese ghost story, if you will. This one is The Maid.
And finally, and most importantly, we have a film from a man by the name of Robert Elkins, who we actually met at Fright Night Film Fest, and we're hand-delivered this film called Backwoods, which is a slasher type.
Which is a backwoods slasher.
Yeah, exactly.
Wilderness slasher, like I like to say. So, you know, a bunch of really good DVDs this week, and I guess we can get right to the news.
Let's just get right into it, because I don't like dicking around.
Yeah. So anyway, you know, we're talking about the Chainsaw Awards, which is going to air on Fuse, which used to be Much Music, in case you don't know what the hell Fuse is. We learned that Scream actor Jamie Kennedy has been tapped to host the first televised Fangoria Chainsaw Awards. Now, they've got presenters they've announced include Rob Zombie, along with his actress wife, Sherry Moon Zombie, as well as Korn's Jonathan Davis, rap artist Chingy, Jiggy with it,
off the hook.
Rock and rock acts The Used, Slipknot, Fallout Boy, Gym Class Heroes. Is that really a fucking band? Gym Class
Ask
Heroes.
Scott Goldberg.
And Cobra Starship. That band sounds awesome.
That's like some kind of elevator music to hell for me. Yeah. Slipknot.
And they've got news on the performers that are slated to appear. Jared Leto's band, who, you remember Jared Leto? He was actually in a horror movie, Urban Legend.
Yeah, I remember him. Unfortunately, I tried to forget.
30 Seconds to Mars will take stage, as will Avenged Sevenfold, with more acts to be announced soon. Now, the award show will air on Fuse on Sunday, October 22nd at 10 p.m. And I think they changed it. It was originally on Halloween night, right?
Yeah, supposedly.
So we'll actually watch it.
The only good thing that I can figure that's ever came out of the Fuse Network was Mistress Julia, who also hosted that.
And she's not
Fangoria
there
Blood
anymore.
Drive.
You know that?
I didn't know that.
Well, they kicked her off.
Well, they should have, because she's
son of
thing,
a bitches.
Like, worth a shit on that
that's
whole
true,
show.
Yeah.
But I'll still watch that anyway, though, just because it's something unique.
And, hey, if you're going to pick a host, I mean, Jamie Kennedy, he just comes off as generic now, where he's had that crappy show on WB and all that stuff. But who else could you have would actually host? I was trying to think of that earlier today.
You mean like would actually lower host themselves to host a horror award show?
Yeah.
I'm sure there are tons of people like from the 80s that would like give their right nut to do that.
Yeah, but they don't want anybody like that. They want somebody that's sort of relevant,
I guess so. All those people.
Jamie Kennedy really isn't, but you know.
Okay, here's a big story for me because I don't have this film on DVD yet. Critical Mass Releasing is issuing a new special edition DVD of Bob Clark's seminal holiday classic, Black Christmas, on December the 5th, just in time.
Which actually makes the third release of that DVD from Critical Mass.
Yeah, this edition will include the all-new documentary with actresses Olivia Hussey and Margot Kidder, clips from Midnight Screen Q&A with Clark, star John Saxon and composer Carl Zitrer, and a new anamorphic high-def transfer with 5.1 surround sound. Oh,
you damn hussy.
Yeah, but I've been waiting on another re-release of that movie because the other two are harder than hell to find.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, very interesting thing from the Horror Channel that I wanted to mention. This coming Tuesday after Shadow Falls, they'll air a special one-hour video interview with George Romero, which they recorded, they'll record this weekend, I think. And it'll be this Tuesday, a little bit after 9 p.m., because that's when Shadow Falls starts. So I'm probably going to check that out. One-hour interview with just Romero. It's got to be killer.
Yeah. I mean, we're apparently never going to get to do an interview with Romero because we can't go through the agent.
Yeah.
But I think eventually we'll end up bribing him somehow. We'll get to do it.
Yeah.
But one of the biggest stories, I actually heard about this on the news. I think it was Fox News, maybe, and when I woke up yesterday morning, was Sony Pictures, Lionsgate, and Comcast are grouping together for their own horror cable channel called FearNet. And the channel solely devoted to horror movies on demand, along with internet programming as well. Sounds very familiar. I don't know if if you're aware, but I think Horror Channel has tried to do this, and to some degree, Monsters HD has tried to do this.
Yeah.
But since Lionsgate and Sony own about half of all the horror titles put out today, that means that they'll have a big library that they can put on.
Yeah.
So.
And anybody with Comcast, that surprise, I think it said anybody with Comcast Digital Cable will get this channel. It's an on-demand channel.
There's also going to be a segment called Masters of Fear, which will be directed by horror film directors and sounds amazingly familiar, too. But this was apparently announced that because of the content and ratings concerns, Comcast intends to apply parental controls on the channel's edgier content. So you can imagine how shitty that's going to be.
Yeah.
But there's no word on when the new channel will launch, but if you want more info, go to fearnet.com.
Yeah. Hopefully, I'm hoping the best for any channel that comes out that's a horror channel exclusively because, you know, it's way overdue. It's a shame that these studios just won't, why don't they release the movies to every, I mean, I don't understand that. Wouldn't they make more money if they release it to every channel?
Yeah, I can never understand what the big deal is because now, I can understand before because you couldn't get the licensing rights from like all these different film companies and stuff, but now you're talking about two companies that own 50% of every fucking horror movie that comes out today, okay? Yeah. There's no licensing problem. Right now, what the problem is...
Well, you're talking
is,
about all the newer movies because nobody else really releases.
Yeah, comes out right now.
Yeah.
But... See, the thing about it is because of Comcast, for some reason, they're going to edit this shit. We're talking about a station supposed to be completely devoted to horror movies. They're going to edit the content.
Yeah. I'm still hoping for the best because we need a horror channel. Bad. Yeah. You got a goddamn Western channel, you got a golf channel, you got a fucking romance channel. And you've had a sci-fi channel for freaking almost 15
years. Which is basically, actually, a sci-fi channel's turned into like some kind of horror channel. I don't know if anybody's noticed this. But mostly what they play on their original programming is horror movies. Like Sasquatch Mountain and shit.
Sasquatch Mountain.
But still.
Yeah.
Okay.
At any rate, though, I suppose we should take a quick break and get back with a few more news topics to get to, and then we'll get right to the Patrick Ray interview here on DeadBit.com.
Baby butt wipes! DVD! Baby butt wipes! DVD! If you ain't got a DVD, crack whip with pork and beans. If you ain't got a DVD, crack whip with pork and beans. Crack! So you ease yourself down to Walmart.
Attention all horror fans in the Midwestern United States. It is.
It came from Lake Michigan.
Racine, Wisconsin's only horror film festival. This October 20th through 22nd, you can get to meet
Lloyd Kaufman,
Brink Stevens,
Fred Olen Ray,
Debbie Rochon,
Susie Lorraine,
Jason Paul Gollum,
Amy Lynn Best,
and Scott Goldberg. Join them along with other independent filmmakers for the
It Came From Lake Michigan
Film Festival, October 20th through 22nd, 2006. Go to itcamefromlakemichigan.com.
Howdy, folks. Welcome back to Deadpit Radio. I'm Uncle Bill.
I am the creepy Kentuckian, and we have a news topic here about the original Halloween. Now, if you have a Regal Cinemas in your area, you can see Halloween on the big screen on October 30th through the 31st. It's going to be Regal Cinemas nationwide. We'll carry the film. And also as added bonus, they'll include interviews with the original stars, P.J. Souls, Nancy Loomis, and Charles Cyphers, as well as composers Alan Howarth and John Ottman, who will be discussing their influence on John Carpenter's legendary soundtrack and how it's influenced them. And as an extra bonus, with the new Halloween reimagining director, Rob Zombie. And I'm sure all the fans will be bootlegging the fuck out of that when we see it on YouTube soon.
That's right. And personally, I think they should have something like that, but have it for Riverfield 10 Cinemas instead of Regal Cinemas.
Yeah.
So we can get that down here.
Unfortunately not.
Or the Strand, maybe.
Yeah, the Strand.
The Strand chain of theaters.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me that there's a lot more of that going on. The Nightmare on Elm Street is another one that was re-released nationwide.
Yeah.
So.
So they should pick different holidays, too, though.
Yeah.
Like I said, they could have the Uncle Sam one on the 4th of July.
Mm-hmm.
They could have a Memorial Day Massacre. Just a bunch of stuff like that. Okay, for anybody that actually has Monsters HD, first of all, congratulations, because I don't know that many people that do.
Especially around here.
Yeah, but they're having a 24-hour creature feature called They Came From Outer Space on September the 24th, starting at 6 a.m. in the fucking morning. The movies to be showcased include both versions of The Blob, the original Invaders from Mars, Body Snatchers, the killer brain classic Fiend Without a Face, Killer Clowns from Outer Space, and the Japanese destruction fest The Mysterians. For more info on this, just simply go to Monsters HD's website.
Thank you.
MonstersHD.com.
I guess.
For all the more info you need.
Yeah.
Our good friend, Gregory the Butcher, over at KillerReviews.com. Y'all need to go check out that site, because he puts a shitload of work in it, and he actually updates it more than once a week.
Yeah, he does put a lot of work into that site, and it is
and he wanted us very to much worth mention that he got some new interviews up, which will all be posted.
He stole one from me.
He did. He stole one from DeadPit.com, when he also interviewed Carrie Ann Fleming, the Masters of Horror series, as well as The Tooth Fairy. You all need to check both of those out. As well as actress Leslie Valenza from The Eighth Plague, which I haven't seen. Actor Talon Torero from Driftwood, haven't seen that either. Writer-director Andrew Van Den Hooten of Headspace, which he says is an awesome movie. I haven't seen that yet either. And they're also running a special feature on French horror film, what is currently being looked at by distributors called The Room, which will be released sometime in 2007. We have the only review posted on the web, an interview with director Giles Deost, and two exclusive clips from the movie. And he says, also please mention that I rated the film 4.5 out of 5.
Yay! So, go over to KillerReviews.com, please, and check that shit out.
Yeah.
Because he said to, and that's all that really matters.
Yeah, and if he didn't pay us $50 to say this, we probably wouldn't say it. So. Yeah.
Okay. Synapse Films, who are great friends of ours.
We love Synapse Films, and I believe we are being put on the main screener list. We're going to get shit from now on from Synapse.
Oh, Jesus, that'll be great. Well, here's one thing that we might get then. I don't know, but scheduled for release October 31st. This is called 42nd Street Forever, Volume 2, The Deuce. And what this is...
The Douche.
The Deuce.
Okay.
The Deuce should be even better, really. But
You're starting that one.
I mean, taking a shit. What this is 2 hours of coming attractions for horror films, from horror films of the past. You got shit like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Evil, Murders in the Rue Morgue, The Giant Gila Monster, Female Jungle, Helga, Street Girls, College Girls, The Pom Pom Girls. Basically just,
Tranny Girls.
Yeah. Basically what it is just a bunch of different trailers from films that you probably never be able to find anywhere else, and they just put them all together. Into one big collection.
That must be a lot of trailers.
It is. I think it's like 42 different trailers. Something
shit.
Like that.
Shit.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
But, yeah, you can check that out to go to Synapse Films.
And Don May Jr., but he's a big friend of us.
Don May Jr., yeah, that's a possible interview subject we'll have in coming months, which a lot of people seem to be interested in.
Just one thing that doesn't really pertain to us, but I thought was amazing because they would actually do it. But on October the 2nd, Anchor Bay UK, which apparently always releases the best shit possible, will release a 5-disc set that will include Suspiria, Tenebrae, Terror at the Opera, The Steinhall Syndrome, and The Card Player as part of something called the Dario Argento Collection, which we'll never get anything like it over in the U.S. because they stink.
Yeah, I think, I'm pretty sure Anchor Bay owns all the rights to those in the United States, too.
Why in the hell, why the UK then, buddy? You know what it is? So for some reason, people over in the UK have a better, like, understanding of what horror fans want. I don't know if you notice that or not. But as far as, like, DVDs and box sets and shit go, they always release the best stuff.
Yeah, but, Anchor Bay UK is killer, too.
Other than that, the Grindhouse Film Festival, which is October the 30th in San Francisco, will have the 1982 Chainsaw Saga Pieces, and then Lucio Fulci's 1981 supernatural zombie classic, The Beyond. This is at the Castro Theater, 429.
I love that song.
And then we're going to shoot a kid in the face. Yeah. It's 429 Castro Street. And both the event also includes a reel of rare exploitation trailers and a raffle for giveaway prizes. It's only $7, so what the hell are you waiting on?
Yeah. You know, myself and Scott Goldberg yesterday were talking to John Brody about he's a big Fulci fan. Mm-hmm. Zombie is his favorite one. I don't really hold Zombie up there with the Beyond or City of the Living Dead, but beyond that,
beyond
the Beyond that. And... Gates of Hell, City of the Living Dead. Fabio Frizzi, freaking awesome composer for those movies. That just makes those movies. It makes beyond anything else.
Yeah. How many times are you going to use the word beyond?
I don't know.
That's just killer pun, but
But if you really look at it, the star of the movie, and it creates the mood, the pacing of the movie is the freaking score. If you don't have the soundtrack, go out and buy it or download it or something. It's awesome. Both of those.
I won't say that it does the whole movie because I think the gore in those movies is probably what makes all those movies popular as they are.
No. Well, yeah, the gore is what draws the audience in, but the music brings you in the movie.
I understand that music's important. But people don't have avatars for the fucking Fabio Frizzi or anybody. They got avatars of that chick puking the guts out.
How do you have avatars for Fabio Frizzi?
You just have a picture of him. You know what I mean, though. People don't remember.
Yeah, but why are there bootlegs?
The gore.
There's bootlegs everywhere of the soundtracks. The soundtrack is very important.
Buddy, there's bootlegs of me taking a shit. There's bootlegs of anything.
No.
So who cares? Okay, one last thing I want to mention because we actually been waiting for this to happen for fucking ever. But Media Blasters has decided that they're going to release in partnership with Code Red Entertainment, Don Jones The Forest, which is coming November the 7th. And I've got some specs on the actual movie and the extras and shit like that. It's going to be apparently presented in 16:9 enhanced, 1.851 widescreen, and include audio commentary by Jones and actor Gary Kent and a still gallery.
That's right.
We reported on most of this stuff months ago, but it has just taken a while for Code Red to get distribution, I guess.
Yeah.
It also includes audio commentary by actress Joan McCall, producer Mickey Blowitz, and co-director...
Mickey Blowitz.
Yeah, co-director. Moderated by Darren Gross. Interviews with Blowitz, Sheldon, and actress McCall, and alternate main title sequence. And so that will be available streaming November the 21st.
Well, kill.
That's all the news I got. Blow it at you, Dicko.
I've got a couple of screenings. First one up is fucking awesome. Saturday, September 23rd, which I believe is tomorrow, the Exhumed Films presents a Fred Decker double bill consisting of the writer-director's cult favorites Night of the Creeps and The Monster Squad. The show begins at 8 p.m. and takes place at Philadelphia, Pennsylvania's International House Theater, which is located at 3710 Chestnut Street. Admission is only $10 for both films. So check that shit out. And this Monday, which is September 25th, Metropole NYC at 10 p.m., will have a screening of David Cronenberg's The Brood.
Mm-hmm. Which I recommend anybody pick that movie up if you haven't ever seen it.
Yeah, and that starts at 10 p.m. It's a free admission with one drink minimum. You're going to be hanging around with a bunch of drunks, but it's a free movie other than that.
And so now I guess I'll go ahead and read off the DVDs that are going to be released September the 26th.
DVD!
And my God, like, if there ever was a time when you probably should pick up some DVDs, this would be it. Because
this is the week, folks. This is the one we've been waiting for.
So first off, we got Chaos is going to be released, which we reviewed. Yeah, from Razor Digital, which is a great film. Like, it's basically Last House on the Left 2. Then you got Dark Shadows Collection number 26, which is
I still haven't gotten through three yet.
You got the Dark Waters Standard and 2-disc Special Edition from No Shame. You got the Dead Zone Special Edition from Paramount. By the way, this is the week when Stephen King's movies get all re-released. So you've got the Dead Zone coming out. You got Dracula 75th Anniversary Edition coming out, 2-disc set from Universal. You've got Dust Devil, the final cut, which we'll be doing on here, I think, from Subversive.
Eventually.
You've got Frankenstein 75th Anniversary Edition. You've also got Head Trauma, which we haven't watched yet, but you also got The Last Broadcast coming out the same date.
We reviewed that last week.
Which is a great movie from Lance Wheeler. You've got Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer 2 from Dark Sky coming out next week. You've got...
Which we will be reviewing sometime.
You've got Masters of Horror Imprint.
Which we'll be reviewing.
You've got Nightmare on Elm Street, new 2-disc special edition from New Line, which I'll be buying.
We won't be reviewing it, though.
You got Pet Sematary special edition, another one from Paramount. Return of the Evil Dead special edition, re-released from Blue Underground. Mm-hmm. And then you got the Stephen King collection, which is a 4-pack that includes the Dead Zone, Pet Sematary, Graveyard Shift, Silver Bullet. You got Street Trash, the 2-disc special edition coming out from Synapse. You got the Texas Chainsaw Massacre special edition from Dark Sky. Somebody's going to go fucking broke. I'm telling you, it's probably going to be me. But
if we wasn't doing this show, we definitely would be.
But then you got the Zombie Pack 2, which I'm buying this too, which has Zombie Holocaust, Burial Ground, and Flesh Eater in a 3-disc set from Shriek.
I've always wanted to see Flesh Eater. That's one zombie
I've always wanted to see Zombie Holocaust. But aside from that, you've got Tombs of the Blind Dead from Blue Underground, and that's it. But Jesus, if that's not enough.
And I'll tell you what you horror fans can do.
Save your fucking money and get a second job.
Well, yeah, other than that, especially in our case, we have enough horror DVDs to keep us busy for a long fucking time.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to wait until the deep discount 20% off sale, which is November, and I'm going to be buying probably Last Broadcast, Nightmare on Elm Street, the Zombie Pack, you know, stuff like that. I'm just making me a list, and I'm checking it twice. I'm going to be getting that shit in November. And you know, deep discount is cheap anyway. If you go to deepdiscountdvd.com, they're cheap anyway, but 20% off makes it extra good.
Are you trying to get like a sponsorship deal from Deep Discount?
I would like to, actually.
I figure that's what you
they
do.
They are seriously the best DVD site out there.
That's the way to plug that. If that's all the DVDs.
Is that not true, though?
They're the cheapest, yeah. But anytime you blatantly mention something like that, it's usually for a reason.
Well.
But yeah, I'd say that this next week's probably one of the best weeks for DVDs that I've ever
seen. Probably the best week until Halloween, I would say. You know,
I don't really understand how you could get, because you got the fucking Texas Chainsaw Massacre, you know, remastered edition coming out. You got that zombie
which
pack
we will
out.
Review that.
You've got all of the fucking Stephen King re-releases coming out. You got the, I mean, yeah, it's
looking pretty good. Stacked.
Yeah, it really is,
brother. So since we went through all that shit, I guess it's time for the interview.
It's time
with Patrick fucking
Ray, an independent filmmaker who resides in Kansas, and for some inexplicable reason makes the best short films that I believe I've ever seen. At least the best quality short films by far, and probably some of the best written ones too. But, yeah, and he'll tell you, we mentioned the websites in the interview and all these different places you can go to see some of his short films, and he'll talk about his feature film. And this is honestly one guy where I know I watched all his movies, the short films that he sent, and, you know, just had to interview him because...
Yeah, I mean,
spotlight somebody.
I guess we can go ahead and mention this really quick, too, before we get to the interview. We have a few people email us and ask for an interview or ask how they can be interviewed on the show. Well, it's not like there's a set rule.
Normally, yeah.
But the thing is, we're at a point now where we actually get a lot of people emailing us about interviews. So if you're an independent filmmaker, send us your stuff. If we really like it, we'll ask you.
That's the main rule that we have, if we have any rules, that we need to see your films before we actually do an interview with you. Because most people we pick, we do because we've seen their stuff and like it.
Or, you know, if you're already a big-named celebrity that we think you would draw some listeners in, or we really want to interview you,
we give you a call.
But
honestly, though, we've never really done it because just people were big-name celebrities. We've actually, most of the horse celebrities that we've gotten that were already established, we liked some film that they're in, like Felicia Rose and Sid Haig, and you know, all these people, and Tiffany Shepis have been in films that we actually liked.
Right. But anyway, there's that, and we've rambled enough. Though.
It's all about us liking you, basically. Yeah. If we like you, you get on. If we don't,
you got to have the Dead Pit seal of approval.
Yeah.
But anyway, here's a guy that actually does have the seal of approval stamped right on his head. It's Patrick Ray on DeadPit.com.
Could you tell us a little bit about your background and what made you decide to pursue a career in film?
Well, okay, it all started when I was like 4. just seeing films like, when I was little, like, seems like, seeing films like Poltergeist and Raiders of the Lost Ark and Star Wars, you know, the typical thing for my generation, and got me interested in film, and I never really wanted to do anything else but film, so I grew up in Nebraska, a small town in Nebraska, and decided to come to the University of Kansas for film school. Since Nebraska didn't really have a film school, and they're just now kind of getting one started. Mm-hmm. And the one here at the University of Kansas is pretty set in stone, so I decided to come here.
What first got you into the horror genre?
Well, it's one of those things. It's one of those things where, you know, when you're little and your parents are like, I don't want you watching these films.
Yeah.
And you did it anyway. So because of that, you know, it got me interested in the horror genre, and it's just been my favorite genre of film since then. So.
Yeah.
Considering that you have done mostly short films so far.
That's right.
I was just curious, are there scenes or, you know, particular angles that you see in certain horror films that you try to emulate or maybe work into certain shorts?
That's interesting. Not really. I think it's, you know, it's one of those things where, like, a lot of, my style kind of emulates in terms of shooting is it's very like, we don't do much handheld camera work. I think the most I've ever done handheld wise was for Zero the Counter, the short Zero the Counter. Mm-hmm. But most of the time I try to keep the shots very steady and smooth, and dolly track shots and crane shots and such. So in that way, I haven't gone for the really off-the-shoulder handheld look, but I like to keep it kind of just static.
Yeah. I have noticed, though, that most of the short films of yours that I've seen don't look like they were done on digital video. Is that film stock?
That was, you know, a lot of those are done with 24P, the Panasonic DVX-100, which is digital. The ones I sent you were done on digital. Woman's Intuition was shot with the... HD Vericam, which is like one of the most expensive digital cameras you can use.
Yeah.
It's just that we spent a lot of time lighting and getting the lighting right. Once you do that, you can really make it look like film. We just finished a short on Super 16 film, which it's in the editing room right now at this point. We're working on it. And it's going to be interesting taking that short and then putting it next to, say, Woman's Intuition and seeing if anyone can really tell a difference.
Hmm. Yeah, because I think you did a great job in making it not look like digital.
Yeah. I mean, we spent a lot of time lighting and making it look as good as we can, try to, you know, and if a lot of people can't tell the difference. Like, if I show it to my folks, they're like, I can't tell the difference between that and film. But, you know, if you show it to, like, you know, like film experts, they can kind of, I mean, if you blow it up on a bigger screen, you can definitely tell. But like on television, I mean, when you have it on a DVD, you can't really tell.
We've noticed though, to date, you're the only director that was featured twice on the Fangoria Blood Drive series.
Uh-huh.
Can you tell us a little bit about that whole experience?
Yeah, it was great. Those two short films that were on that DVD, we did, those were two of our college films that we did at KU. And if you watch them, I mean, there are some of our earlier works, but if you watch them, they're shot in the same apartment.
Oh, okay.
Not many people can tell that. And I didn't even really think about it until, like, later. I was like, yeah, we shot that. The brick walls in the background is the same as that place. But, yeah, like, it was great. I mean, we got some nice coverage for that, and Fangoria's been great. And whenever we've got a new project that we're doing, Fangoria is very, very helpful, and they sometimes put little news bulletins on their website about it and such. It was just really cool. I mean, it's kind of weird seeing your student film on sale.
Yeah.
In a store. It's just, every now and then you just have to look at it, because, you know, I still find it places, and it's kind of weird. But
yeah.
But cool. I enjoyed it.
I was always curious how it works with, do you guys get a percentage?
In the case of the blood drive, it was definitely something where, it wasn't, we didn't get a percentage, but it was definitely something that got us some, you know, I guess, looks from other people, you know, some, you know, publicity, which was just as good in that case.
Yeah. I kind of want to talk to you about some of the short films that we've actually received and watched.
Uh-huh.
Maybe you could tell us some of the backstories behind, you know, how they were created and
sure.
Used. But first one being Hell to Pay, which I think was one of our favorites.
Uh-huh. Well, that film, a guy we know from South Kansas wrote the script. He actually didn't really, he wrote the story out, and then I kind of converted to a script. In the original script idea, he had her leaving the voodoo doll in the freezer, and then the guy froze to death.
Yeah.
Which seems like, it didn't seem to work. I didn't want her to be at fault for killing him. I know I wanted it to be like, she taught him a lesson, and then he kind of like created his own demise, which is what happens at the end, which I thought works better for the audience, because that way it keeps her character sympathetic.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was shot in Lawrence, Kansas. Like, all those films are shot in Lawrence, Kansas. We shot that over, like, 3 days. And, like I said, we shot with the Panasonic DVX-100 camera, which is a miracle camera for independent filmmakers at this point, because, I mean, you can really, really make it look good if you light it properly and really make people – it just looks very professional. But, the main actress, Jeannie Averill, she's kind of, like, known around this part. She's a professional actress. She does a lot of plays in Kansas City. And her husband was actually the guy that's on the infomercial, that's hosting the infomercial.
Oh, okay.
And I used him again in Zero the Counter. And, it was just a lot of fun shooting that. I mean, it was kind of a relaxing shoot.
So how about Zero the Counter then, which was probably my favorite, actually?
Zero the Counter, well, okay, the entertainment editor of the newspaper in Lawrence, Kansas, John Nickham, wrote the script. He gave it to me like a year and a half ago, and we didn't get to it till like January, shooting wise. And it was one of those things where, you know, it was very, the casting was very slow for that, because it was one of those scripts that could go completely wrong. So we had to really be careful who we casted for it, so that it was believable.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought we did a pretty good job getting two actors who definitely did a pretty good job with the script. The trick, of course, was shooting it on a road And we had a vehicle mount that we attached to the car, which which if you saw the vehicle mount, and you would probably be very, very nervous attaching a $5,000 camera to it. It's a piece of metal with suction cups.
Oh.
And then, but we were like, well, because you suction cup it to the side of the door, and you're supposed to reapply it every, like, 30 minutes, which makes you nervous. Because then you're like, okay, we've been shooting for 45 minutes. Maybe we should check to make sure it's still attached.
Check the suction cups.
So we had to literally, like, we tied rope around it. And I actually used Kendall Sin's camera for that shoot. Because we kept driving down this one stretch of highway shooting, and he was in the car behind us, like probably thinking, "Oh my God, I can't believe my camera's dangling outside of this car right now." But we made it work, and the shots looked pretty steady. I mean, you can't really shoot a conversation in a car handheld. I mean, we've done it before; it just doesn't work. Mm-hmm. So when people see that, they're like, "God, how do you guys keep that stuff so steady?" So steady, and I'm like, "Well, we had the camera suction cups inside of the car." And it's one of those things where you don't want to be driving in town with the camera, because, I mean, if one person decides to pass you and maybe gets a little too close, they'll take the camera right off the side of the car. So it's just, you know, it made everybody nervous, but, you know, we got through it. And it was funny because we tied rope around the door, through the door, and around the suction cup thing. And then when we finally stopped shooting that day, we untied the rope and the entire thing just fell off. So basically, the only thing that was holding it up at that point was the rope, and not the suction cups. But anyway, I mean, we shot part of it in the snow. That, like, that flashback when he murders that victim, we shot part of that in the snow. And it's always nice to be shooting in Kansas, in the middle of nowhere, and we have a girl face down in mud, covered in fake blood, and we've got these guys in their trucks driving by. And you know, all we can do is just kind of, it was around Christmas time, so I just kind of looked at them and said, "Merry Christmas." So
we just got through talking to Kendall Sin, actually.
Uh-huh.
And you collaborated with him on The Last Laugh, I think.
That's correct. And we also just finished one called The Thing About Bands Lookout, which I don't know if he talked to you guys about that, but I can send that one to you guys.
Okay, that'd be great. But from the stuff that I've seen with Kendall's work on the Shadow Falls series, that seems to be more like an anthology type of thing. Yours seem to be more just standalone kind of episode.
Yeah, they're standalone pieces. That's correct.
Yeah. So, were you a fan of like Tales from the Dark Side and the?
I was a huge fan of Tales from the Crypt. Huge fan of Twilight Zone. I'm a big fan of Creepshow.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like it, the next short that we're doing two more. We're doing one at the end of September. And the one at the end of October, both of which are similar in tone as of the other films, but one of them is called Farmer's Market, and it's kind of Creepshow-esque. It has a guy who grows plants that sprout body parts, which ought to be fun.
Yeah.
And he sells them on the farmer's market, which is great because, you know, we're in Kansas and there's lots of farmer's markets, so we can just pick one to shoot at.
Yeah. Speaking of Creepshow, I always felt the movies that you sent us, the four movies, they would really work well if they were put in, you know, all put together as like an anthology.
Well, we're talking to the Horror Channel about that at this point. Kendall and I are planning a short film series called Heartland Horror, which we're getting started with the Horror Channel, and it's going to be like a collection of short films that are all standalone pieces, but kind of Midwest in nature. Like, I think some of them will be, you know, like for instance, Woman's Intuition is definitely a good Twilight Zone-esque short.
Yeah,
exactly.
It doesn't really have a Midwest feel, but there would be some of shorts like that in the series. I mean, as opposed to just shooting every single thing on a farm.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, and absolutely, like we're talking about putting all these together in kind of an anthology DVD kind of thing.
Yeah, that'd be great, actually.
Yeah, that'd be really great. Can you tell us a little bit about the Cell Shock series, which I actually did watch all of those?
The Cell Shock series is something that we're doing with a company called N8 Studios, which is based in Lawrence, Kansas. And currently, we were asked to do roughly 11 2-minute shorts, which they're just really fun to shoot because it's like instant gratification. It's like we go out and like within 5 hours we've got it shot and finished. it takes you like maybe 2 hours to put it together in the editing room, you know.
Yeah.
But they're fun. I mean, it's one of the things where right now they're going to start kind of promoting their online stuff, and so we were contracted to do 11 2-minute episodes. So we will let's see how it goes from there. But yeah, those are just kind of like very very brief ideas, you know. It's interesting trying to come up with something that has got kind of a beginning, middle, and end in 2 minutes, you know.
Now, I was going to ask you about that because you do have a knack of creating like a complete story with atmosphere and everything in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
I haven't really seen Hollywood be able to do in 90 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
I was curious as, you know.
It's not easy.
How did you do that?
It's not easy. Like, I don't know if it's just, I don't know. We've been making shorts now since we started working together in 2001, and we've just gotten to the point where we've just got this kind of formula going where we just know exactly what kind of works, and which, you know, we just finished our first feature film, which I don't know if Kendall mentioned that to you at all, but it's called The Empty Acre.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not really a horror film as much as it is more of just like a supernatural thriller. But it's premiering in Kansas City in September. I can send it to you guys. Keep in mind, it's not really a horror film. It's more Twilight. It's more of a Twilight Zone-esque, kind of a dark Twilight Zone episode. But, you know, we're working towards doing another feature next year. But I've got, like, my plate full as far as short films are concerned. I've got quite a few up in the, that are coming up, so.
Okay. What were the big differences in working on a feature film as opposed to a short film? I mean, I know there's more money and crew involved.
Right.
But other than that, I mean, what are some of the technical things that...
Well, it's interesting because it's like, The Empty Acre we shot over a year and a half. I mean, we were able to, the good thing is we were able to maintain a really good relationship with the actors so that they would do it for a year and a half, you know, and in Kansas, I mean, actors really just want to be part of something around you, you know, and participate, you know, because there really isn't that much work out here yet. It's getting better. In fact, I'm currently the assistant director on a feature film being shot, full-length movie, stars James McDaniel from NYPD Blue. It's being shot in Lawrence and the surrounding communities, and it's just pretty much my full-time job right now on top of doing these short films. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a big ball game. It's, you know, you've got like, you know, 30 shooting days as opposed to like 3 for a short film, you know. It's a SAG shoot, so you've got, you know, rules that you have to abide by with that. And, you know, you have to, if you work people for 12 hours, you have to feed them every 6, you know. It's a lot more complicated. And you have to, you know, figure in transportation for people, all the crew and such. So it's, you got to have enough people so that every position is covered. While it's a short film, you're given a little bit more, you know, it's you can really prepo the hell out of a short film. You can really sit down and work it all out and so that everything is covered up and everything is ready to go, and so that when you're shooting it, those 3 days go really smooth. In the case of, like, Woman's Intuition, you know, it's a 7-minute short. I had it completely storyboarded. I had it all worked out shot-wise, and lighting setups were all planned out with the DP, you know, weeks ahead of time. With a feature, I mean, you got to do that months and months and months ahead of time.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to, like, plan almost a year in advance,
yeah,
you know, to make it go smooth. And that's kind of the big difference there.
Do you have any idea when the film will be released as of right now?
The Empty Acre? Well, you know, we're in talks with some distributors. It's getting some really good reviews. House of Horrors reviewed it a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they acknowledge the fact that it's not a horror film. It's not a gory. It's kind of slowly paced. It's more about atmosphere. It's more about the characters and stuff like that. So it's not hostile.
Well, that's good, actually. Yeah.
That's great.
So, you know, and that was, I definitely wanted to make our first feature something that has, you know, we wanted to be artsy a little bit, you know. We wanted to keep it, you know, to the point where, you know, we wanted to make it something that it is more than just a standard slasher film or, you know,
yeah,
zombie movie or whatever. So.
Yeah. I'm just curious, as a director, what would be your dream project, you think?
Oh, boy. Oh, that's a tough question. You know, I've got several, like, projects I've always wanted to do that aren't horror.
Yeah.
You know, and it, it all depends on, you know, like, because right now the horror thing seems to be working very well. We, you know, so I'm want to stick to that. And it's my favorite genre, you know, and if I ended up spending the rest of my life making horror films, I'd be happy. But as far as the dream project, man, that's tough. There's just so many. I want to shoot a film on the ocean. Like a really big movie on the ocean, which, you know, is like the kiss of death for a lot of filmmakers. Because
that's kind
of
what I was thinking, yeah.
It is. It's like every film you see on the ocean seems to, like, go completely over budget because the ocean is just
water
like...
Water world.
Yeah, water world. It's just such a unpredictable thing, you know. Right now we're fighting our Kansas weather with this movie that we're shooting now. You know, it's like it changes every 5 minutes. It's pouring rain, it's sunny, it's pouring rain, it's sunny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we've got, like, all these night exteriors. So you have to really kind of take your locations into account when you're shooting. But, you know, I really want to do a movie on the ocean at some point.
Okay.
If that, hopefully that happens. It's a big idea, and I don't know if, like, if it would probably cost tons of money and such. But, you know, that's if I was to pick a dream project, that would be the one to do.
Is there anyone in particular that you're kind of trying to pursue to work with? As far as maybe writers or directors go?
Well, you know, I would love to work with John Carpenter at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, like, a lot of, like, his films from, like, 1978 to 1987 are, like, some of my favorites.
Yeah.
I mean, his later stuff in the 90s hasn't been as good. Which, you know, but, like I said, I would love to work with him. I'd love to work with Wes Craven. I mean, just actors, directors like that. I'm not a big gore fan, like, so I wouldn't really want to work with someone who's into just gore. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm more into, like, the ideas and stuff like that, so.
Could you tell us a little bit about maybe some of your future projects that we might not know about?
Well, we have a feature that we're planning for next year called Four.
Okay.
And it's kind of a sci-fi-esque suspense. It's kind of, it's not full-on horror. It has horror in it, but it's more of a kind of Twilight Zone, X-Files kind of story. I've got the Farmer's Market short that we're going to be shooting probably last week in October, first week of November, which it's going to be a 3 or 4 day shoot. And then after that, I've got just a couple more shorts. I'm going to be doing, you know, some stuff for the Horror Channel, hopefully, and just trying to think. Well, and I've got one other feature planning that's in the writing stage right now that takes place in a blizzard in the Midwest. So... That would probably be the next step.
Okay. One last question.
It's a horror film set in a blizzard in the Midwest, you know, it's one of those things where, like, one half of the movie is a 911 operator alone and that would be easy to shoot.
Yeah.
As opposed to the scenes in the blizzard, which we'd probably have to do completely on a stage somewhere.
In 10 years, where would you like to be as a director?
I would like to be at the point where we are just, like, where I can comfortably make films and not have, you know, it's one of the things where, best case scenario, we'd be making a feature film a year, which is kind of what I would like to be doing. I mean, the short film format's great, but at some point we're just going to have to kind of focus on doing feature films, I believe.
Yeah, we really hope that that Empty Acre turns out to be a really good film, though.
Yeah, it's a really good first feature. You know what I'm saying? Like, we didn't spend very much money on it. We did. It's like the other short films. We were able to really focus on lighting and performance of the actors and stuff like that. Which, you know, if we were on a tight schedule, if we had been shooting in a different place, we might have had to rush it. And so we took our time with it, and that's kind of where that film stands. Like, I would like to be at least making films in 10 years with a reasonably sized budget.
Yeah.
And I'd be able to, you know, because we're at the point now where we're getting some funding for some short films. We're able to pay our talent. We're able to pay our crew for short periods of time. Now, I'd like to get to the point where we could pay people for a 2-month schedule. Mm-hmm. You know. And keep that going, because what I'd like to see is Lawrence become a place, and it's slowly doing that. I mean, there's lots of feature films being made around here that are getting distribution. I'd like to see it develop into a place where crews can keep working and steadily throughout. People don't have to work normal jobs, and people can keep doing this like Austin, sort of, you know?
Yeah.
Grimm, a tall man, a phantasm. You think when you die, you go to heaven. You come to us.
Howdy, folks, and welcome back to DeadPit.com. I am Uncle Bill.
And I am CK.
We really want to thank Patrick Gray for doing that interview with us.
I hope all the people out there enjoyed it. And definitely want to watch out for him. You watch out for the Empty Acre, which I'm sure we'll be reviewing here eventually.
If any of y'all have a chance to get a hold of any of his short films, like, I don't know, Whim's Intuition, or
Zero the Counter,
or any of those films like that, definitely
The Last Laugh.
Get a hold of them by any means necessary, just yeah. Like Malcolm X.
So now we must begin the promotion for the Angus Scrimm interview, folks. It's just a week away. Are you ready?
Yeah, it's not that big of a deal, though. I mean, just Angus Scrimm. Who really cares?
All the millions and billions of Phantasm fans around the world.
That's true, and it actually probably is one of the better interviews we've done, and it's a two-part interview. He was nice enough to give us a good amount of his time.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, he's probably one of the nicer people ever just trying to help you out with different things.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing that I mentioned to you when we started this show that I wanted to accomplish, because let's be honest here, Angus is an old guy now. I mean, he's 80 years old. I wanted to have him on the show. I wanted to have him on the show before it's too late, I guess we could say.
Yeah, I just wanted to have the dude on the show because he was the tall man.
That's right.
It was advantageous that we got him before he died.
Yeah, but I mean, if anybody listens to the show, you know that I put over Phantasm a lot. I've done it many times, especially the original one. But, yeah, the interview, 1 hour with Angus Scrimm total. It's going to be the first part next week. Then on October 6th is the second part. So you'll definitely want to tune in for that. You know, Angus doesn't do many interviews.
Doesn't do many convention appearances anymore.
No, he just did one last year, and that's it, I believe. He hasn't done one since.
But, yeah, I will say that it is one of the better interviews that we've done. And as far as the information about the films go, you're not going to go wrong by listening to this interview. Talk about all the different Phantasm films.
Yeah.
And some other.
And the guy was so nice, we're going to actually call him back next week and let him know about it because he wants to listen to the show.
Yeah.
You know. So we look forward to doing that, and I'm sure everyone out there will enjoy the interview. So anyway, we got fan mail. We got a lot of it.
We got mail.
That's right. So we'll let you go ahead. You go with the first question.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the email query section. This comes to us from Rhodes is God.
It says, if you guys could have one item of movie memorabilia, that what would it be? Example, Freddy's glove from Nightmare on Elm Street or the Myers mask from the original Halloween, etc. That's a good question.
Yeah, that is a really good question. I would have to go with the Myers mask from Halloween, the original. And I believe Nick Castle has the original one.
Fuck you, Nick Castle. I'm a rob you.
Actually, though, there's probably more than one. I'm sure that...
Yeah, there's... I thought of like a ton of different
Jim names. Winburn probably has one, and I'm sure Tony Moran has the one that he...
Oh, different masks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm quite positive since about everybody on that film set played Michael Myers one time or another.
Yeah.
But mine would be, and this is going to be odd, and I don't know who has this, if anybody has this, the chainsaw that Leatherface used in the end scene.
I'm sure somebody has it.
In the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah. That'd be a good one, too.
Also, as like a backup one, I always wanted to have like one of the SWAT uniforms that they wore in Dawn of the Dead.
But although you wouldn't be able to tell it was the, you know, it's just a regular
Navy. I know. But still, you could like frame it like a huge, I can just see it now, like a huge like poster.
You know, you could actually still frame, just buy one at Walmart and frame it, and then like try to sell it on eBay.
I'm sure somebody's tried to do that.
Probably do it.
I wouldn't put it past somebody like
Ken. Well, there's some other cool ones, though. I mean, you could get Freddy's sweater.
Yeah. Somebody actually did sell that on eBay almost about 2 or 3 months ago for like $25,000. It's somebody that bought it off David Miller.
I think Tom Savini actually has his machete.
Yeah, that thing's got to be worth
it. I think he has everybody sign it, too. It's like he takes it to conventions from time to time to show people.
How about this one? How about the butcher knife from Psycho?
I'm sure that's in a museum somewhere.
Yeah. This is fantasy stuff anyway.
There's plenty that you could probably think of. You could probably think of the smaller items. Like, I remember we used to collect autographs all the time. And Duncan Reiger, who was the original Dracula in the Monster Squad, he won't sign anything, evidently, but he wants to sell his Monster Squad memorabilia. Evidently, he still has a ring that he wore in the movie, and he has, like, a cane or something.
It's the ring that came out and, like, went into Frankenstein's neck. Yeah. That has a little part that came out.
That'd be a cool one.
Mm-hmm. It would. And there's dozens more, I'm sure.
The original spear from Phantasm.
Yeah, exactly.
Or even better, if you could get, I think it's the 1971 Hemi Cuda that was in the original Phantasm. Would that be considered a prop?
No, I think, it would actually. Yeah. I thought about the car that they used at the beginning of Night of Living Dead.
Yeah.
They crashed into it. And actually, here's a bit of trivia on that. Tom Savini owned the car that they did for the Night of Living Dead remake that they used in the film for that first scene, and he auctioned that off on eBay too recently.
He's a damn genius.
Anyway, though, let's go on. That was a really good question. We got something from Joe Evil on there. Dear Dead Pit, I was on Fandango seeing if there were any new horror movies coming out my theater at any time soon. I saw a movie out there called Feast, which came out today, September 22nd, and is the winner of 2005 Project Greenlight contest. I was wondering if this movie is any good. It sounds awesome, but I've never seen or heard anything about it. And there wasn't a trailer or any pic, so I want to know if you guys know anything about it and if it's any good. Well, we haven't seen it.
Yeah, only the things I've heard about it.
John Guliger is the director, who's Clue Guliger's boy.
Yeah. Here's what I know about the film. Apparently the monster in it looks just like Jacko. But I don't know if you noticed that from the
monster in it does look really cool, though.
From the preview pictures, yeah.
I would definitely check it out. You know, I don't think it's coming anywhere around here. But, I would like to see it. I would too.
It looks to be like a kind of pumpkin-headish kind of movie. They don't make those kind of movies anymore. The Creature.
They sure as hell don't. I think the last ones were probably Jeepers Creepers.
Yeah.
And that's really... The first
one, because the second one is hardcore blue.
Well, okay. First half of the first one was really, really good. Then you see that the fucking thing's just a big bug or whatever, and it's like, what the fuck is this?
Well, I don't know. I did like that movie a lot when I first saw it because it was completely different than anything that was coming out at the time. But I have to admit that the psychic, the old woman psychic in it, that like she was blind or something, that was just a stretch just to have her come out of nowhere and be like,
yeah.
she walks into the police department. I know,
man,
you.
I tell
I
you,
I know
you
going to die.
Whose idea was it to do part two? Because that was probably one of the worst movies that I can ever remember.
I think Victor Salva directed that too, didn't he?
Yeah, but I mean, whose idea was it to do a fucking movie that's just in a goddamn school bus, pretty much?
That movie was so...
You know, the movie's almost like South Park, that episode of South Park.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Where they get trapped on the bus and they can't get out because...
They stole part from South Park.
They probably did. Okay, next question.
Brother.
Oh, this comes to us from Vampire. If you were having a night in of beer, chicken, and three films, and the choice of the three films were your favorite U.S., U.K., and Asia horror film, what would the three be? Okay, I guess that means U.S., U.K. And
well, first of all, okay, I don't like beer. I like root beer. So you get root beer,
paper
chicken,
and
bluegrass, papers, and ass.
In that order.
And hopefully Tiffany Shepis will, she'll be the ass, if you will. You know.
In my dreams!
It's all part of rock and horror fantasy.
Okay. Favorite UK, because that's the toughest one.
Yeah, it really is.
Oh, shit. I would probably have to say Asylum.
Really? Okay.
Because that's probably one of the better ones I've ever... I liked Shaun of the Dead all right, but...
So what would you pick for your Asian and U.S.? Because we've been watching a lot of Asian horror films. Y'all have one in mind, man.
Yeah. Let's say for the Asian one, The Uninvited, which I said was probably one of my favorite ones a few weeks ago. Now, what's the U.S. one criteria? Just one?
Just, yeah, favorite U.S., U.K., and Asia horror film.
Well, if I pick favorite, it would be Halloween, but I'll just pick something different that people may not have seen. Let's go with Just Before Dawn.
Ew, that's lovely.
I love that fucking movie.
All right, mine, U.S., just because I want to be different, too, and don't say the same thing all the time, will be Fright Night. Because I've recently rediscovered how much I really like that movie.
And it's needs a special edition.
It really does.
Bad.
And for U.K., I'm guessing that...
We didn't feel a lot of British horror stuff.
We never were big fans of, like, Hammer. So that kind
well,
of
I ain't going to say we're not big fans of it. I just haven't seen a lot of it.
Yeah, that too. One from the U.K. that I remember loving when I was a kid, and I actually still like it now, was the original Tales from the Crypt movie, which was an anthology like all the rest of those movies that came out around that same time. It was probably the best anthology movie out of all those ones that Amicus released and Hammer released around that time.
Yeah, if you know.
And as far as Asian horror films go, I'm going to go with Junk, just because I really like that movie for some reason.
Yeah, and also, the movie is Junk, pretty much. Yes. I mean, it's not a movie, it's just gore.
Exactly, that's exactly why I liked it.
Well, why didn't you pick Guinea Pig then? That's all that fucking movie is, too.
Well, no.
I'm talking about the
first
Guinea
Pig. That's completely two different, completely styles of movie right there. Like, one of them is just a basically torture film, and the other one's like a zombie action film.
Okay, we got something from Porkerface.
That guy's, yeah.
With regard to your interviews, he's talking about people we interview, have you ever regretted not asking a question or forgetting to ask a question to any of your guests? Or the converse, asking a question you wish you'd never asked? If you've had no regrets, then how about a hypothetical question? You can interview anyone in the history of horror movies. Who would it be, and what question would you ask?
All right, let's start off with the first one. Have I ever... not ask a question and then regret it. There's only one time I can ever remember, like, after an interview or any time after an interview, where I was like, shit, I completely forgot to ask that question. And that was during the James Bryan interview when we were doing for Don't Go in the Woods.
Yeah.
I didn't ask him why the whole film was dubbed.
Yeah,
I always
regret,
like, not asking that question.
Usually, though, we don't regret anything because we usually, believe it or not, we do plan ahead. We write the questions out.
Yeah.
And, you know, because we don't forget a question.
But that was one of the most obvious questions that just completely, neither one of us asked him either. Just completely got left out of that interview.
Well, if I was guessing, we'd probably email him to ask him.
Yeah.
They probably just didn't have the audio equipment to record audio, so they're just like, you know, we're going to bring in a studio and you're going to dub the whole movie.
I just wish I would have got to ask that. That's one that I knew right after we did the interview.
Because, you know, they didn't have much of a budget. If you listen to the interview, the guy paid $400 for all expired film stock to use to film the movie.
But so, other than that, the main people that we've ever interviewed, like the bigger name celebrities, if that's what, I don't really have anything I didn't
ask. I think, seriously though, the Tom Savini interview was a fucking miracle. I don't know how we pulled it off. Because we literally had 2 hours to prepare for the interview.
Man,
and
that's another
case.
It was
probably one of our best interviews, actually.
That's another case of just right place, right time, and luck, I guess.
Yeah, because I don't know how the hell we managed to ask him a little bit about everything that he was involved in.
Yeah.
But we did. And, you know.
What was the second part of the question, though? We wish something we'd asked, we wish we hadn't asked.
Yeah.
There's only one time I can remember doing that, and it wasn't something I asked, but it was just something that I said. And I think it was in the context of talking about Bundy with Tiffany Shepis.
Yeah.
And I said something like, I'm a huge fan of serial killers.
And I started cracking
what
up.
What I meant by that was I'm a huge fan of, like, serial killer movies, but it came out that I'm a huge fan of just fucking, like, killing people or something. And she was like, oh, really? Or
something. So I think she called you a sick fucker.
Yeah, she did. But that's one thing I do wish that I hadn't said, maybe. other than that, as far as like saying something that might piss somebody off, I don't think we've ever even done that. So,
no, we usually don't try to push the limit. I think the most I ever pushed the limit asking anything that might piss somebody off is I asked Tom Savini why the blood and Donald Dead look like red paint.
Yeah, and I think he agreed, though, so that really didn't even piss him off.
So,
and the last part was if we could ask one person any question.
Yeah. Ah, here's what I would ask, even though it's probably been asked, but I just can't remember the answer. I would ask John Carpenter what inspired the Halloween theme. Like, how the hell did he come up with it? You know.
Yeah. I guess I'd probably ask John Carpenter, too, if he actually ever planned on that first shot. Because ever since Tom Savini said that, that's bothered me about the first shot, the perspective being way too high for a kid. I'd just ask him if he actually planned it that way and then shot it, or if he didn't even realize what he was doing.
Well, I think he... All right, here's what I think. I think he was just trying to confuse people.
Yeah, but see, I'd like to ask him to actually... you can, like, speculate, but he may have just actually done it and then not even realize that, you know, it was like that. But I don't know. I guess that'd be the question I'd ask.
Maybe we could ask him one day. Who knows?
Yeah, I doubt it, too.
I seriously doubt it, too.
Whatever.
Okay, next question. This comes to us from JJ187 with my gat in your mouth something. Yo, what's up, Uncle Bill and Lil Creepy? Lil Creepy?
I'm Lil Creepy, yo.
Despite the stupidness of this question and the fact that I might can guess the answer, but do you two play video games? And if you do...
sure as fuck no.
And if you do... Do you play scary video games such as Resident Evil despite how crappy the movies are? The video game is pretty decent. Also, I know you're busy with the movies, but if you ever get a chance, you should review a scary video game for the once in every blue moon that one comes out. Okay, here's the thing. I think there's a new video game right now called Dead Rising. Is that right?
I don't know.
Yeah, and it's like a zombie video game. But, no, we don't play video games. I don't remember. I did have Resident Evil 1 and 2 for PlayStation. And I did used to play that a lot and like those games.
I wonder if we could convince people from Xbox to send a shit like that, though.
It's possible. But then again, we never play it.
No. That's the thing with me. I used to play video games when I was in high school and, you know, 12, 13 years old. The thing is, I always played video games maybe the first 2 days I had them. Then I would just never play them again.
Well,
and it's just a waste of money.
There comes a point in like time in everybody's life when you're riding along like the cultural trend railroad and you just fucking decide to stop. Like after PlayStation 2, I guess, I was just like, I'm not going to buy anything else that, you know, goes up like the Xbox 360 or fucking anything else I get. I'm not going to go up anymore in technology.
Yeah. So I mean, well, it's getting to the point too where they're coming out with new systems every 3 or 4 years. Which is another, when they first come out, they're what, $400?
Yeah.
And the games are $50 a piece, usually. I mean, shit.
So we don't play video games anymore. And probably won't for a while.
No. We've got a question here from L1.
Mm-hmm.
Who mentions, you guys have mentioned that you were disappointed after meeting Tom Savini and Bruce Campbell. We never met Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, we were just disappointed in hearing about the stories behind Bruce Campbell.
We were going to meet Bruce Campbell. Yeah. I think that's what he was talking about. We sort of talked like we sort of met him. But we just decided not to fucking give him a dime. Somebody being that greedy.
Yeah. Plus, we didn't meet the guy, but just the circumstances around how much he wanted for his, you know, to sign something for him. Plus all the stories that I've heard of people who did meet him, I don't think we really missed anything. So.
No.
I just personally think he's an asshole.
What's
the rest of the question?
He never much cared for Sid Haig until he met him at a show and he was good to the fans, and I became a huge fan of his. So my question is, have you guys ever met someone at a show that you didn't think you were going to like and ended up becoming a fan of them?
I just assume that I would like everybody, I think, at that.
I think the horror find, we really didn't go up to anybody we didn't know.
Yeah.
You know.
The only other frame of reference I have is the Fright Night Film Fest.
So yeah.
I'm guessing that I wasn't really sure how Gunnar Hansen was going to be because, you know, I mean, he did have the possibility to be a prick. Because he,
I knew he wouldn't be, though.
But
he's...
I suppose I came away...
You never
away,
hear anybody say a bad word about him at convention.
I say something else, though. I hear a lot of people say a lot of bad shit about Heidi Martinuzzi, but she didn't... She was never anything but really nice to us.
Yeah.
So I'll say that. I was... I'm probably a bigger fan of hers now than I was before because I didn't know anything about her.
I can tell you some really nice people that we've met through the show who seem to genuinely be fans, like Brett Kelly.
Robert Kurtzman.
Robert Kurtzman. You know, it's fucking amazing. Robert Kurtzman freaking emails us and still listens to the show. You know, I believe he still listens to the show. I mean, he... tells us to keep up the good work, and he's telling us all the latest stuff on the Rage. And Kevin Tenney, to a point, listened to the show for a while. We haven't talked to him for a while.
Honest to God, though, here's the weird thing about this whole question, because it comes full circle for me. Like, Savini was a guy that I really wanted to meet, and when I got to meet him in person, I thought he was going, like, I thought he was the biggest asshole ever. But the weird thing about that is that I thought he was going to be the biggest dickhead in that interview that we did.
Yeah.
Like, we were just geared up for that because we thought, I think we thought he was going to act like he did when we met him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was completely different. Like, he answered, like, everything, and he was, like, really nice about everything. It was just completely 360 from his convention.
Tiffany Shepis is another one. Just makes you feel like you're freaking best friends with her when you're talking to her on the phone.
Yeah, she's got some good social skills.
She really does. Yeah. And she's another one that some responds people, to all of the fan mail herself.
Here's the odd thing. Some people are just good at talking to other people. Good at interviews, I should say. I don't know if it's where they've been doing them for so long, if they're just naturally, like, sociable. Just some people are, and then some people we do aren't. And I don't care to mention, because we're never going to talk to this guy again, that Joe Dante was one of those people that wasn't,
yeah,
you know, that good of an interview because he wasn't good at talking with people. I mean, he just seemed like he didn't want to do it, and, you know, it was,
well,
just
it seemed odd. Like he didn't want to give you any sort of info.
He was very uptight.
Yeah.
That was what it felt like to me. Very strained conversation.
Well, I mean, there's, you, people could definitely tell in the interviews who are, who's worried about what they say and who isn't.
Yeah.
You know, and he definitely was, he didn't want to tell us too much, but again, he's probably, as far as, dollar value goes, he's probably the richest fucking guy we've ever talked to on the show.
Yeah, and that's always important.
Well, somebody a, like that.
The richest guy.
They have money for a reason. You know, they don't want to spill the beans. To
he has money because I think he was butt fucking Spielberg at one time.
Okay. Anyway, though, I mean.
Well, those two were friends anyway. I'll just say that.
Let's go on.
Let's move on.
Hey, it's out.
Okay. Hey, guys. This question is more about your show than horror itself. I was just wondering approximately how much time do you guys spend each week preparing for the show? Do you do the research together or just whenever you have the time? And finally, you might have already addressed this question, but what gave you guys the idea to start this program? We actually have talked about this before, but this
yeah, we'll mention it again.
From HD1201C. We don't do the research together, but I think we pretty much use all the same resources to get the news and stuff.
Yeah. And we're often emailed some stuff to mention too.
Yeah, and
anybody that wants to email us anything, deadpit@deadpit.com, usually we'll read it on the show if it's relevant to us.
And what we do is when we get on here, we both have our different news stories that we gathered throughout the week, and we try, like, we'll most of the time have the same shit, like on both, that we've both looked up, and we just wait for somebody to say one, and then we do the other one, and we don't, you know, so we don't do the same ones. As far as questions that we ask people in interviews, we both, like, write out our own questions, and before the interview, we read them down so we know that which ones we got that are exactly the same, which happens 90% of the time that we do interviews. We have the exact same questions, probably. We just mark those out. And the next part of the question was, let's see. How much time do we spend preparing for the show?
Well, okay. Preparation means also grabbing the news stuff, going through the fan mail and picking what ones we want to use.
Mm-hmm.
Website stuff, which is all me, as far as updating the website. I do that earlier through the week, though, so I don't have to worry about it on the day of the show. I would say, for me, it's probably about 2 hours a week, pre-planning and all that crap.
I don't know, probably.
If you're not counting, we got to watch movies, too.
Yeah.
So.
At this point, well, if you count the movies, then we're talking about probably 4 hours on the movies.
No longer than that. We watch 4 movies. Average about, what, hour and a half a piece?
I'm just talking about myself, like the movies that I actually give. But, okay, let's say then.
All our movies, I'm saying. We review 4 weeks.
All right, let's say then. Most of the movies we watch are 90 minutes. So let's say 6 hours a week on the movies. And then let's say I probably spend about 30 minutes looking up the news and different stuff like that, because I have to go through a bunch of different stuff. And let's say another 30 minutes to just doing emails and responding to people and talking about stuff like
that. Yeah, but that's not really preparation.
Well, it is if you're going to read the emails on the air. So I would say about 7 or 8 hours we actually spend doing this a week. If you talk about movies, too.
Yeah, but you got to understand, like, most of the stuff we really don't consider work.
Most of it we'd be doing anyway.
Yeah. Because, you know, website stuff, there's not much I'm updating. All I'm doing is updating the pictures and, you know, changing the text, whatever it is. You know, the site is pretty basic. You know, it's not like I'm updating shit for hours on end.
But, okay, what's the last part of the question?
What inspired us to do the show?
I've said this a million times, boredom. That's the main thing that inspired this show.
Here's the thing, too. If you guys don't know this, Horrorgraphs was our original site where we basically, you know, we're big collectors of horror or anything. We collect autographs and stuff. And basically, we had pretty much every autograph that we could think of. So we're like, what's next? What can we do? And, you know, I'm a fan of pro wrestling. There are pro wrestling radio shows out there. So I was like, this has been probably a year ago now. How come there isn't any horror talk radio shows up there?
And at the time,
along the lines of the same format.
At the time, there were a few, but they weren't any like
what. No, they were like Rumor Radio, yeah, which just plays stupid Halloween music, like you buy a little Halloween tape at the grocery store or something. That's all it is.
I don't know. I've never been able to figure this out, if we were the actual innovators of this shit or not, but I will say this. We definitely like have the best program, the best guests, and the best everything else of anybody else I've seen doing this shit.
I'll be honest with you, too. If there was a show before ours that did this shit, I didn't know about it. And I'll swear, like...
Yeah, and you know I didn't know
everything
about
in
it.
Me that I didn't know a damn thing about it. And if it... We're not saying we're the first that did it. I'm just saying that I'm the first that we're the first that I know of that did this style of show. And now, you know, there's what, 5 or 6 out there that's like us. So,
but it, you know, here's the thing. I listen to a lot of these different programs right when they come up and come again. It seems to me like they mostly have our same basic format, even if they claim not to.
Yeah.
But the thing that doesn't make it work is that it's just generic. It's like they don't put any feeling into the show. They don't put any preparation into the show. And really, they don't have any guests that anybody gives a damn about. You can't just... I mean, I know it doesn't seem like what we're doing takes any skill, but it really does. I mean, it actually takes some preparation, and it takes a certain amount of like knowing how to talk to people and, you know, to get these people to even do the interview.
Well, the thing, though... All right, and one skill that we basically do have is we have the ability to get in contact with people. For some reason, other people just, they can't do it, or they don't want to do it, or they're scared to talk to people. Yeah. But, you know, some of these people aren't easy to get, folks. You know, and that's where the autograph thing came in handy, because we knew where a lot of these people were located, how to get in touch with them, so... Yeah, that's how it came about.
And, yeah, but I think...
We're actually, in the last week in December will be our 1-year anniversary. which is coming up pretty soon.
I think there was a post on the board that Hydroponic made in his continuing quest to try to act like a tough guy. Is that something about Wes does about 80% of the show, and I'm a slacker and all this stuff. I'd say he probably does about 70% of the show, if I was being completely honest. That's actually probably the truth, around 70 to 80% of the show, because I don't do anything that relates to editing the show, and I don't do anything that relates to the website. But, you know, what the fuck you want me to apologize for? Is there anybody else in the fucking, even in this state, that would do this?
That's true.
So,
and
you know,
shit, he don't know how to edit websites, shit.
Yeah, I'm not, that's his fucking job. That's what he does, period. I mean, what the fuck? If it was my job, I'm sure I'd be the one editing the goddamn website. But
your
anyway.
Your job just a sick dick. Yeah. Your job's to edit me sucking dick.
Oh, God. Anywho, Runk Exploitation Russell. You need to shorten that name, by the way. That's too long.
You tell him, by God.
I'm curious to hear which movie in the Sleepaway Camp trilogy is your favorite. I personally enjoy the second one the most. I think Pamela Springsteen rules. She quit acting in the early 90s to become a photographer. What do you guys think of Bruce Springsteen's sister performance in the Sleepaway Camp series? Actually, I agree with you. I like the second one better than the first one.
I do too.
I thought Pamela Springsteen was fucking awesome in both of those movies. I really loved the fucking guy. What was his name? Rerun?
Mm-hmm.
In the third one?
The black guy?
Yeah.
I don't know if his name was Rerun or not. That Rerun was the name of that black guy on the, what was that show?
Fat Albert.
No, oh God, What's Happening? What is
it? Well, it's something like that. And you remember the scene where she actually raps to the guy she's going to kill him? I like that. I thought that was cool.
But, yeah, I probably like the second one better than all the rest of them. And I think it has something to do with the fact that that was one of the first movies that I remember seeing where they put, like, all the other horror villains in one movie. Like,
yeah. You know something? Okay, this is one I swear to God, I think I've mentioned this before. I've been looking for the poster for Sleepaway Camp 2. On eBay for at least 6 months now. Mm-hmm. Does it not exist?
Well, the poster of the third one exists.
Yeah,
think
I've seen the third one there. I've always wanted that poster. And it isn't even Pamela Springsteen on the poster.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know who the hell it is.
It's anyway. Not Pamela Springsteen on the third one either.
No. It's the third one's like some big titty broad or something.
Yeah, but... Yeah, we've actually tried to get in contact with Pamela Springsteen.
I've got a number for her. We could try to call it, but she's probably wants to avoid that part of her career. You know, some of these people, she actually is a professional photographer for like celebrities and stuff now. So,
yeah, she doesn't like anybody talking about the fact she did that.
Even though she should be proud of it, because I thought she did a really good job.
Yeah, she should, but she's probably not. Okay, this question. It's from Bloody Lens Limited. Oh, jeez.
That's Donnie.
Yeah, I know. He's just trying to... I've known that for a while. What are some of y'all's revenge-themed movies? If UB says something like, I didn't even know those existed again, slap him for me, CK. Actually, I don't think I said that. I'm pretty sure that there was somebody that asked something about cosmic horror films, and you were the one that said you didn't think those existed.
I just didn't think anybody ever called them cosmic horror. I never heard that.
Yeah, but anyway... You come and slap me, Donnie Miller, you bitch.
Man, leave Donnie Miller alone. He's got ADD.
Yeah.
Seriously.
I'm sure he
Revenge-themed films. Okay. The first one I thought of was Last House on the Left.
Well, it's just asking, what are some of y'all's... It doesn't even ask. It just says, what are some of y'all's revenge-themed movies?
We haven't done any revenge-themed movies, unfortunately.
Yeah. Last one I directed was... I guess that there's not that many I really like. I Spit on Your Grave. I don't even really like that movie that much, but
I liked
it.
Okay.
It was average. Yeah. And then Last House on the Left, and what after that?
I'm sure there was
theme
a lot.
Movie.
I'm sure there was something with Steven Seagal.
I think it's supposed to be horror movies, though. God, yeah. think that was every movie that motherfucker made. Mark for Dance.
Steven Seagal.
Out for Justice.
Bent on Revenge.
Here's something that I've noticed since I was in high school, though. Every single movie Steven Seagal made through the early 90s on was always something about him being something. Like he was out for justice or above the law or marked for death or what was the other one? On something ground.
Daily Ground.
Yeah, on Daily Ground. Just something about him being something. But, yeah, I can't think of any other horror-themed revenge movie, so I don't think I'm much cared for him, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure if we did actually research this shit, we'd probably find more. Off the top of my head, I just can't think any more than Last House on the Left or I Spit on Your Grave.
Mm-hmm. Good question of Donnie Miller, asshole.
We got something from Pat the Mick.
Oh, shit, yeah, I forgot about that question.
Hey, Uncle Bill and the crazy Kentuckian. It's the creepy Kentuckian, motherfucker. He says, I fucking love the show. It's funny as shit and very informative. Great show last week and the one before. And the one before that and the one before that. Mm-hmm. Seriously. I know you guys aren't huge fans of the sequel thing, but I noticed you guys said on last week's show that you liked Halloween. I have two questions relating to this topic. One, do you guys like any other Halloween films besides the first one in that series?
Yeah.
And second, I heard a rumor that Rob Zombie is making his own Halloween film from scratch.
No.
What do you guys feel about this idea, and how do you think the audience will respond to this?
Do we like any of the other Halloween films besides the first one? I like part 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, H2O. I like all of them except for Halloween Resurrection.
Yeah. Okay, let's go through them. Part 2 was just directed by Rick Rosenthal.
Part 2 was basically part 1 in a fucking hospital.
It was. It was just, it connected part 1 to part, you know, it was just the same night. It was more of the night he came home as well as the tagline.
Okay, part 3. Everybody gets pissed off at part 3 because it wasn't an actual Halloween movie.
Tommy Lee Wallace directed that one.
And it's one about the mask that crushed kids' heads and it's all this big conspiracy.
Yeah, it was actually, I think John Carpenter had the idea that he wanted to make Halloween from then on was going to be, you know, just a different sort story, I guess. Sort of like an extended version of Twilight Zone or something like that. Then part 4, when they finally come back to Michael Myers, it was actually the return of Michael Myers.
That's like the classic 80s version of Michael Myers, like the slasher genre Michael Myers, yeah. I guess.
Dwight Little was the director on this one, who hasn't done shit since, I don't think. This brought in Danielle Harris, was Jamie Lee Curtis's daughter, supposedly, and Michael was after her.
Ellie Cornell.
Yeah, Ellie Cornell.
Rachel Carruthers.
And then they were both back again for part 5.
Which, now, that one, after having to rewatch that one again, it's still a good movie as far as slashers go, but that may be, like, the weakest one of that series. It was almost the same as part 4, except the guy that was directing didn't know what the fuck he was doing.
Yeah. I like part 5. I actually saw 4 and 5 in theaters. 5 had the ending where they kidnapped Jamie Lee Curtis.
5 also started the Thorn shit, which just absolutely blew ass.
Which really, you know, it
had no fucking purpose about it.
it continued on in part 6, which I always want to watch part 6 again. And when after I watch it, I'm like, it's not that good.
You just think
I can't explain it. Like, you always think it's not that bad, but when you watch it, it's really bad.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true.
But it's still decent. I'll say it's decent.
Now we go on to Halloween H2O, which I really, really liked when it came out, just because it was, okay, like, I know the cast is kind of like the fucking faculty cast.
Right.
That's got, like, Josh Hartnett.
And it was written by Kevin Williams.
Yeah, it's just about the same kind of stuff as all that came out around that period of time.
That's why I didn't like it. It felt like Scream.
It did. It had that kind of, but still yet, I don't know why, but it was just, I liked the Michael Myers stuff in it, and I liked the fact that it had Jamie Lee Curtis back in it, and it just, for some reason, worked.
So we go on to 2002, which was Resurrection, which really,
that's the only movie that I could probably never watch again in that series.
I think I bought the DVD and watched it one time, tried to watch it again, and I couldn't get through it.
Yeah.
It's, that killed the series. They have to bring it back with Rob Zombie. Now, that's the only way they can do it, because I think the fans are sick of it. They didn't want to see that shit. Fucking Busta Rhymes.
Yeah.
You know, that killed the series. So it's up to Rob Zombie to resurrect the series. Is all
the next thing in line for that series was him going into fucking space. I'm telling you, that's how bad it was getting.
So that, yeah, I mean, as bad as I hate remakes and reimaginings and shit, that needed to happen because, you know, that series is fucked. That movie fucked the series. I can't understand why they wanted to make that movie. I mean, oh, God. It was just bad. They had the fucking
what guy. What the hell? Have you ever noticed this, too? There was a period of time, I guess it's probably like around that era, when Halloween Resurrection came out, where everybody was making those damn films that had to do with, like, the internet. And reality, like, yeah. Shit on the internet.
And they also made, like, they had Blair Witch elements to them, like, where they had the handycam and shots and stuff.
Those were some of the god-awfulest films. Anytime a film had anything to do with, like, somebody setting up a webcast, or, you know, some kind of had to do with the internet. Like,
and for some reason, people loved that then, though. That was the big thing.
It really was. I think, you remember Fear.com?
Yeah.
That started all that crap about the internet stuff, I think.
Talk about one movie that'll guarantee you some sleep, that movie. So, yeah, if you go to Rob Zombie now, though.
Fear.com, by the way, had a great premise, though. If you logged onto the website, you died. Fucking killer, he said. I wish we had that on our website. That'd be awesome promotional tool.
Oh, God. Anyway, though, Rob Zombie, I'm definitely looking forward. I want to see what he does with it, at least. Okay, one last question here. From the Butcher, you guys never mention horror comics on the show. I'm a casual collector, then my favorite being Hack and Slash. Are you guys comic book fans? And he says, P.S., tell your listeners that I am not looking forward to seeing The Grudge 2. Jesus, I have some self-respect. He's kidding, by the way. He says in parentheses, I'm just kidding. I want to see The Grudge 2.
Yeah. And then he goes on to say that he thinks Texas Chainsaw Massacre prequel will be better than the original.
I mean, he probably would say that, knowing him.
But, no, I was being serious. I was a big comic book fan when I was in high school, but I haven't really bought a comic book for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years now.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of comics.
I sure ain't. There was one, though, that had horror elements to it that I always liked, and it was called Lady Death, and there was one called Evil Ernie. All these, and I actually bought the Dawn of the Dead comic book just because.
I had a Phantasm comic book. Yeah. I have that because it's signed by Don Coscarelli. Yeah.
But the only reason I bought the Dawn of the Dead comic book is because I was a huge fan of the movie, so it really didn't have anything to do with.
Yeah.
The comics.
For somebody out there that does comic books, hell, send them. Well, I like to see them to see what they're like, you know. I know that there's a lot of movie-based comics, like they have the Friday the 13th comic series, the Leatherface series, the Nightmare on Elm Street series, Dawn of the Dead, of course, Night of Living Dead.
Here's the odd thing about us that people don't seem to understand. We're really, like, big geeks, and that's apparent. Because we're doing this show, but for some reason we just never get into the levels of geekdom. Like we don't like video games, and we don't buy comic books and shit like that. We don't dress up like the characters. We don't do anything like that. I'm not a fan of Lord of the Rings, so that makes me like some kind of antichrist in the minds of a lot of geeks. But
I even like Lord of the Rings, but I don't think I'd go to the level like going and buying like pewter busts of. Like Gandalf and Gimli and all them people and buy like helmets and shit. But hey, if you're that big of a fan, that's killer that you like that. But you know, that's just not us. We don't do it.
Yeah, another thing that we don't do amazingly, although I have done this at one time, is we don't buy the toys. Now there was a period where I did actually buy all the Movie Maniacs when they came out. Like I've got the Michael Myers one and the Leatherface one and the Jason one I had signed by Kane Hodder and blah, 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 blah.
You got to understand, though, if you fall into the trap of buying them all, then you're going to be broke.
Yeah, fucking. That's the thing. I know if I got started doing shit like that, that'd be the end of it. Because we've been down that road.
you don't want to go down that road. Yeah. Anyway, though, we're going to take another break. I think we're going to play the fourth part of Inside the Forest Hills. It actually has conspiracy theorist John Brody on this week. So it's very interesting. You want to check that out.
Is Scotty Too Hotty on there?
Yeah, with him, interviewing him. So after that, we're going to get to the DVD reviews here on Dead Pit.
Dead Gam.
Hello, it's Scott Goldberg, director of The Forest Hills, and you're listening to Inside the Forest Hills, only here on DeadPit.com. Today I'm here with actor, conspiracy theorist, and I believe, what else do you do, John? You're a writer as well?
Writer and producer, too.
This is John Brody, who's here with us today on DeadPit.com for the segment. And I guess we'll talk a little bit about how you got involved in some of the films. I know you're a big horror fan.
Yes.
Can you tell us about that?
Absolutely. Horror fan since far back as I can remember. Creature Feature, 10 a.m. on Saturday mornings. Frankenstein, Night Owl Theater, Texas Chainsaw, and I Live and Dead in the theater when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
The works, man. I just always loved it. Always felt close to the genre.
Yep.
And later on in the 90s, I started writing short stories. And then wrote Dark Night of the Soul and did that. And that was really like almost like a student film that I did, for all intents and purposes.
Yeah.
It's the first thing I ever really did, so.
Now, how'd you get involved with Ron Atkins? I know you worked on him a couple films, and then that actually led to you getting featured in Horror Business. And that
I used to run a mail-order company called Phantom Video, and I used to wheel and deal in rare horror laser discs, and Ron used to call up constantly looking for titles, and we just talked and became friends, and he sent me a couple copies of some films he did, and we agreed to go forward and do Dark Knight together. Back then it was called Scorpio. The title was changed to Dark Knight of the Soul after he re-edited it years later.
I see. Now, what about Horror Business? How did you get involved with Chris Garitano?
When we were shooting The Sins of Government out in Vegas, Chris came out there to shoot Ron's segment for Horror Business, and we met and hit it off pretty much right away, and that's how I met Chris while we were shooting the initial intro scenes for Sense of Government out in Vegas.
Okay, very cool. Now, now you're a big conspiracy theorist. Can you tell us, I guess I'll give you 1 minute right here on the floor to tell...
Not so much conspiracy theorist, I'd like to call it truth-seeking.
Okay, truth-seeking. So I guess you get a minute of floor time here to actually, you know, give, tell what your opinions are, tell what you think. You know, going on in the government and what you believe, stuff like that, I guess.
With the government as far as what, the U.S. government?
Yeah, the United States government.
Well, you know, basically I go by the theory that nothing is as it seems. You know, the people that run the show pretty much have mastered presenting things to the people as the opposite of what they really are. And, you know, a lot of these people appearing as Christians and Catholics on the news are far from it. They're really, a lot of them are Satanists. And a lot of people don't realize that all Christian and Catholic rites are derived from satanic ritual. The wafer is used in satanic ritual, it's internal organs, and the wine is used instead of blood. And that's where these come from. And, you know, most of the powers that control things, you know, Satanism is at the forefront of all of this. And it's very well hidden, and most of the people don't know anything about it. But things aren't what they seem, you know. Basically, we're moving toward a one-world government, in my opinion, where, you know, control will be at the forefront.
Yeah, so I guess for all the listeners there, you guys should really just, you know, think about, I guess what's really going on, right?
Yeah, and, you know, you couple that with the mind control that's fed to us constantly through TVs, cell phone towers, ELF, suggestion, you know, you can't even watch a commercial anymore without being hit with Levitra and Viagra commercials, which is sexual programming, because when your mind is in a pre-orgasmic state, it's the most open for suggestion and programming.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a reason. That's why pornography is so popular, why we can't even turn around without child molestation being in the news every day. You know, that's to get people kind of numb to this. So...
Yeah. So what about the Forest Hills? Tell us how you got involved with that and what your day was like. I mean, I know you came down one day.
Yeah, I came down. It was the last day I was there after we shot Cottonmouth and played Reverend Brooker. And it was a lot of met you in the cemetery and got into wardrobe and played the Southern Preacher.
Mm-hmm.
And had a lot of fun with it. It was a short scene, but I think it came out quite good and should add to the creep factor of the film.
How'd you get into the character for Reverend Booker? I mean, what did you
I had my dad's side of my family's from Alabama, so I've been spent a lot of time in the South, and you know, at one time did have a Southern accent, so I practiced that quite a bit, practiced the delivery, and get back the way I used to talk.
Yeah.
And probably rehearsed the lines about 50 times. I'm a guy that likes to prepare. I try to prepare as much as possible before I ever do something. So I'm prepared for anything that could come up.
Very cool. And can you tell us a little bit about Montauk Unveiled, the project that you've been shooting with Cliff Gaetano here on the
Montauk Unveiled is a pure documentary about the Montauk Project, which is a top-secret project that was carried out at the eastern tip of Long Island from 1970 to 1983. It involved mind control, genetic manipulation, the kidnap and abuse of thousands of young boys from around the United States, time travel, and just an unbelievable amount of stories. And these people that we've interviewed, originally it was going to be a docudrama, but because of the material we've been getting, we don't even need to do that because the doc itself is just, it's evolved into something that I didn't even think it would be. Some of the stories are just so bizarre and heavy-duty that they'll challenge whoever watches it, because a lot of these guys are extremely educated men, degrees in physics, degrees in electrical engineering. You know, they're very smart, but they're out there.
Hey, John, well, thank you very much for your time for this segment of Inside the Forest Hills at Deadpool.com. Thank you.
Sure, man. My pleasure.
You want to party, you want to have fun, and you need something to do on Friday night. You have a place to go where friends are there to greet you. You'll have a place, deadpit.com.
Deadpit, dumbasses.
Welcome back to Dead Pit Radio. I am the Creeper Tug.
I am Uncle Bill.
In case you all forgot.
Yeah, in the 2 minutes we were away.
So now we have some DVD reviews.
Okay, guys.
I guess first one we can mention is from Kelvin Tong. This one is The Maid, which is released by Tartan Asia Extreme.
Okay. So as far as, like, the Asian Extreme series that we've gotten from Tartan goes, this is probably not one of my favorite films.
Yeah, well, this is another ghost story.
It is, and it's actually, it says it's the first homegrown Singapore horror film.
That's right. It is.
But in my opinion, I don't know. I don't know if Singapore needs to be doing homegrown horror films.
Well, seriously, it's not that bad. I don't know if it's as bad as what he's letting on. What it is, I guess we can talk about it. It's about a maid who comes from, she was born in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
And she comes to live in Singapore to help a family out that has like a special needs child who's really grown now.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people don't realize that in Japan, people believe on the seventh month that the gates of hell open and the ghosts are in abundance, I guess. So, of course, there are tons of visions of ghosts in the movie from The Maid.
Yeah.
Maybe too much.
Here's the problem with it. The biggest problem I had with it, too, is there, you know, the scenes that are in every horror film, like when the cat jumps out?
Yeah.
And it's supposed to, like, it's just an automatic jolt, and the music comes in real quick and tries to scare people. That happens, literally. There's a section of that film for probably about 45 minutes where that happens every, like, 5 minutes. And then there's one section where I know it happens about 5 or 6 times in, like, a span of 2 or 3 minutes. Just constant, like, cheap, like, thrills and stuff, trying to cheap scares.
Yeah, they just increase the orchestra.
Yeah. And that just gets really annoying to the point where you're sitting there thinking, I really wish they'd fucking quit trying to scare me. You know?
Yeah. Although I must say that, like, towards the beginning, it does work a little bit. In the middle, they just do it way, way too much, and you almost, I mean, it's getting to the point where you expect it.
Yeah, all the stuff that you hate about movies like The Ring and The Grudge, including, like, the scenes of, like, the ghost kid and, like, how they try to get that you know, scare people.
If you think about
they're in abundance in the middle of this movie.
If you think about it, it's basically a lot like The Grudge.
Yeah.
There's not really much of a story going on, although it does have a pretty cool ending, I'll say.
That's what I was thinking, is that the thing that makes up for the lack of the middle, really, and of any real plot, is the ending.
Yeah, but, you know, if you're a fan of Japanese ghost tales, you'll like the movie.
Let me just say this, though. If you're not a fan of movies like, I guess it's Ju-on and Ringu.
Ringu.
Yeah, then you'd probably really not be a fan of this movie either. Because it's along the exact same lines and probably a little bit worse.
Well, I'll probably give it a C if I was rating it A to F. It's right in the middle.
Yeah, I would
too.
It's
not bad, but it's not good.
But I would probably give it that same grade, but I think I may have disliked it somehow greater than you.
Anyway, though, TartanVideoUSA.com, if you want to look up more info about the movie, or you can buy it Amazon, deep discount. This one is The Maid.
Well, in keeping with the foreign theme, I guess we could mention the 1962 Mexican shocker called The Witch's Mirror.
That's right.
Which we recently got in from, I think it was Panic House Entertainment.
Yes, their division, Casa Negra. And if you get the case up here, you'd notice that they really do a pretty cool job with the artwork. Because if you look on the inside, it's the exact same case.
Let's look on it.
But in Spanish.
Hello.
Yeah, so it's like bilingual.
And you can win free DVDs if you sign up now.
Yeah. So, you know, people talk about we don't mention classic films on here that much from the black and white era, 60s, early 60s, 50s stuff. This was 1960, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And this one's really, it throws you in a loop, I guess, because the beginning of it starts off, it's basically a witch looking into her mirror with a wife of a businessman who's fairly rich, I'm guessing, because they live in a big mansion. And she sees bad things is going to happen to this woman, right? Probably about 10 minutes later, and this is going to be spoilers on here, by the way, in case you give a shit. The wife is killed by the husband.
Mm-hmm.
So then it starts. See, they could done that. It lasted too long. It was like 15 minutes just for that. And it could have just been done like in 2 minutes they could have done that.
Yeah.
Then it goes on to
plus
another.
The look of the film, it has like a real, I don't know if people remember the soap operas from the 60s, but it has that look to it.
Looks a little bit like Dark Shadow.
Yeah, it does kind of look a lot like that.
So then you go on, he gets a new bride. It slowly moves from there. There's ghosts of the bride that he killed before in the mansion. Eventually, the ghost of the bride causes the new bride to, what is
she
falling?
Burn up or something like
she
that?
Falls into like a, she might have crashed into like an oil lamp and it
anyway,
went all
catches,
over her head.
Regardless, she catches on fire and she's really badly disfigured and all this stuff and that's
so,
how she takes revenge.
So then, okay, after she's burned, so the guy who later find out that he's a doctor.
He's a doctor, yeah.
So he figures out a way to graft skin onto his wife's face so she's badly burned, right? But the only way he can do this is by killing other women.
Mm-hmm.
So the movie, okay, it's not that bad, but there's just so much shit going on in it. It's like, you know, where do they come up with this shit? This is enough for like 3 movies they could have. This is enough plot for 3 movies. Yeah,
there's in particular one scene that I can remember where I think they had a guy wearing a black glove to where, so you weren't supposed to be able to see like that there was an axe or something like that.
Yeah.
It was an axe or some kind of blade or something like that. And you could actually see the black glove like.
Yeah, and there was a scene too where his wife's hands are badly burned, right? So he has to find new hands for her. Yeah. And then the ghost hand comes up. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
Where it looks like they have like a black
yeah, that's what,
cloth on over the arm. and it's supposed to be like
you're not supposed to notice the black cloth. That's
it's supposed to be like, you know, just the hand crawling up a guy's back and getting ready to stab him in the back.
I guess that's like
something.
CGI backgrounds before they actually had CGI. That's kind of supposed to be what it was.
They were inventive. What can you say about it, though? I mean, it's just, it's a clusterfuck, really. It's not that bad, but there's just so much shit in it. I can't believe it's just one movie that only lasts 70-some minutes.
Yeah.
And all this stuff goes on in it. And the thing that threw me was the first 15 minutes. It seemed like that was way too long for that, and it really didn't need to be there at all.
But it actually had a nice concept, though, with the mirror. You know, you could see what was going on and, you know, different settings and stuff like that. But and I like the way they did that, too. They just superimposed the image. It's like shit going on in that mirror. But, yeah, it is way too much in one movie. I agree with that. Plus, I didn't think the plot's way too much.
You focus on one thing. Why would you even need the opening scene where he kills his first wife? Because the basis of the whole movie pretty much is...
That's to set up atmosphere is what that is.
Yeah, but you could say something like, you could figure out another reason how the woman got burned. That's basically the whole movie's about, him killing other women and taking their skin off and grafting it onto his wife.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not needed, that added plot line.
I don't think we both cared that much for the movie, so we'll just move on from...
This next one is from Tempe.
Oh, God.
DVD.
No.
It's actually...
No.
Mr. Sandman.
All right. Here's the thing. I was reading on the inside sleeve of this movie before I watched it.
I did too.
Apparently, this movie was made around the time J.R. Bookwalter was getting a divorce from his wife. And you can definitely tell it, because there's like aspects in this movie where he has this relationship. Well, the character in the movie has this relationship with these different women. And they just got a divorce. And But the premise of the movie is basically Nightmare on Elm Street.
But on like a camcorder, pretty much.
And it's about a guy who he keeps having trouble going to sleep because he's having insomnia problems. So he goes over and he starts to talk about to his friends. They all live in a trailer park, which I'm guessing is because that's all Jerry Bookwalter could like get at that
time. That's where he lived.
They all live in this trailer park. So he goes around and he asks people if, you know, and they start to bring up the Sandman, which is this myth that there's this creature that waits for you to go to sleep.
Right.
And then supposedly, if you're having a happy dream, he can sneak in there while you're having a happy dream. And
play with your balls.
And insert himself into the dream and then kill you in real life. But if you're having a bad dream, apparently he can't get into that dream. That's like one of the explanations. Because you wake up and chase him off.
Yeah.
And he doesn't like light. So... But the main character in the film, here's the problem with the film. First of all, it is shot on, like, I think what is a camcorder.
Looks
or
like
if it
a
is, like, an 8mm or something like that, I don't know.
No, it ain't.
But the characters in the film are all horrible, especially the lead character in the film. Yeah. The guy that...
Uninteresting.
Just completely, like, static, one-dimensional fucking characters that come in and out of the movie every 5 minutes, you know, and just... There's one in particular that plays his best friend and talks like constantly throughout the movie. That's the most aggravating son of a bitch in like a horror film. Right up there with that woman that was Ellie Cornell's friend in Halloween 5.
Right.
But
the other thing about the movie that I want to say is nothing happened.
Yeah. The effects are like none.
There's no effects.
I
don't know if there's any deaths in the movie. I mean, I don't remember.
There is, but I think that the old woman dies.
Yeah.
But it doesn't show it. It just shows him like he has like a sickle or something.
Yeah.
And he raises it up and then that's all it shows. Yeah, you can tell though.
And
the money that he had to do The Dead Next Door, which was mostly financed by Sam Raimi, he did not have that kind of money to do this movie. And it shows. And
like, I don't think even if he had the kind of money it would be good though.
And what he was trying to do too, I can't understand because it's just a big ripoff of Nightmare on Elm Street with a different character.
Yeah.
There's no real excuse for it.
Yeah, and it's a bad ripoff of that. I mean, I don't watch this movie. It's boring. It's 90 minutes that I wish I could have back to watch something worth a shit.
I'll tell you another thing about the movie that pissed me off too. There's one character in it that's almost a little bit interesting. And he's the Vietnam vet guy in the movie.
He's only in it for maybe 5 minutes.
Right? Yeah, and plus I'm pretty sure that's some kind of Bill Moseley impersonation he's doing in that movie too. Yeah. But yeah.
The guy looked like he probably could be a real Vietnam vet though.
Yeah, it is a piece of shit though. I can't even defend it. And I really, really like Dead Next Door, but I can't defend this movie at all.
It's bad. Oh yeah, it's bad.
Okay, so let's move on to one that actually did surprise us, Backwoods.
Yeah, and I'll tell you why it surprises, since I know that Robert Elkins, the director, will probably listen to this. Okay, the DVD itself, and I know you shouldn't judge a book by its cover, okay, and I'm sure it's a pre-release. The DVD was given to us, looked like somebody that hand-drawn the DVD art, and you know, it just looked, I didn't know what it would be. I didn't know if it would be shot on a camcorder or what, yeah. You know. It's one of those things you never know, but we were going to review it. I told him we'd review it, because we review anything that we get through the deadpit.com doors. That's just how we are. So this one is really an homage to all the backwoods slashers from the 80s.
Survival slashers.
Yeah. Wilderness slashers. Uh-huh. This one is actually called Backwoods. Mm-hmm. And the guy's from Virginia. I'm pretty sure it's probably where he shot it. And, you know, it's your basic backwoods slasher. You have a group of, I don't know, where are they going exactly? It doesn't matter, really. Going to a party or something.
I don't even think it ever tells where they're going.
I don't think it does either. It doesn't really matter. And car doesn't break down. That's the cool thing. Their car, they just get lost. And they're in the middle of nowhere, pretty much. They want to ask somebody for directions.
I know they wind up at one point in a cemetery. Is that where they were trying to get?
I don't think they ever got where they were trying to get.
Oh, well.
They get lost.
Here's the thing that made this movie hard for me to get any kind of plot out of it or like what was going on is because the audio in the movie, especially in, you know, when I watched it, it was like completely out of context with the film. Like it was almost like the sound dubbing was completely mixed up, and it would have these weird like scenes where it sounded like somebody was like farting into the microphone.
What? I didn't hear that.
Yeah, it would. Like there would be parts where you'd hear dialogue, and all of a sudden it'd just be something like. And then it would I had to crack up a bunch of times while I was watching.
I didn't hear that. I've heard it.
Yeah, there was like a bunch of parts like that when I was watching.
The only part I noticed where the audio had problems was when they were like on the outside, and it sounded like the wind was blowing in the microphone or something.
Well, it was just all fucked up. Maybe you scratched it or something. I don't know, but the point is that's the reason why I had trouble following, I guess, the first part of the movie. It kind of quits doing that after about midway through the movie, but during the first part where they're actually riding in the car and stuff, the audio was all fucked up on when I was.
Well, I think it's the same thing I'm talking about, though, where it just makes like a crackling sort of. And it's, you know, that's probably, I'm sure you can fix that if they remaster it a little bit. Anyway, though, the movie is great. It's a freaking homage to the movies like, you know, Don't Go in the Woods or The Forest or Friday the 13th.
I thought for sure that I would hate this fucking movie because I've seen literally like dozens of movies that look just like this. Like there's one called Killers in the Woods that was like a low budget slasher film in the woods. That movie was fucking shit. I would never watch it again. But I love this movie though because first of all, it had good performances in it.
Yeah, you know, it did.
The acting in it was pretty
The lead
decent.
Lady in the movie did a really good job. I don't know her name, of course.
I don't either. She was hot too.
Yeah.
And the biggest part of it for me that differentiates it from all these other slasher films that I've seen made on low budget is the gore effects. It has really, really good gore effects in it, which was amazing. And the killer in it is basically like a combination between Leatherface and like Tater Sack Jason.
Yeah. It looks, the one thing in the effects wise that I had to crack up on though was when they finally unmasked him.
It looks like something out of a 80s like cheesy 80s horror film. It's good. I mean, it's not bad. It's like almost bad in a good way.
Yeah.
Because it looks like something from Basket Case 3. When it's just like,
yeah, it
you
does.
Know, the I guess it's latex.
One cool thing too, it's sort of another homage to a movie that I really liked. I don't know if you did, The Pit.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, the killer, Caleb, in this movie, his teddy bear talks to him and tells him to kill. So, you know. I love the fucking movie. I was surprised. I was just like you, you know. We got it at the Fright Night Fest. We talked to the director for a little while. And, you know, I just want to wish him the best of luck because I think that somebody will probably pick this movie up if they haven't already. Has a couple of technical problems they can probably fix, I'm guessing. But, yeah, Backwoods is the name of it. And I don't have a site for you. I don't know if he has a site. But if he does...
He says Eyesore Productions on here, but okay. I don't know if that's... You can probably just Google that.
Yeah. But he doesn't have a website out on the actual DVD. But if he does, we'll let you know. I mean, it's one you definitely want to check out if you're a fan of the slashers from that time.
Yeah, and... You know, I know we bitch incessantly on here about movies, and especially a lot of independent movies that are slashers, but honestly, we really aren't that picky. It's just you have to have at least decent acting and some semi-decent effects and maybe some decent camera work, and we'll be happy.
And the music was I really liked the music.
Yeah, and everything came together well in this movie, and that's why we liked it. If every film independent was made like this, we wouldn't have a problem with having to watch some of this shit. But this film is a good film, and... You know, like he said, I would encourage everybody to go out and check it out.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably, I've been in the mood to check out slashers lately, and it seems like we get a lot of zombie movies.
That's basically probably 80% of what we get.
Asian horror stuff, or, you know, some stuff from the 60s and 70s.
Independent-wise, I'd say 80% of what we get is zombie films.
So it was sort of refreshing to see a slasher movie, especially a slasher movie that's freaking damn good, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's it for the reviews. Some stuff that I guess we should mention before we close out another show for this week. As far as the t-shirts go, the announcement is that the Dead Pit store will be opening 1 week from today. So, you can order online.
You can get your Dead Pit t-shirts and KFC buckets.
We're going to have you. Dead Pit t-shirts, the same shirt that I wore to the Fright Night Film Fest. We also have signed mini posters, signed KFC buckets.
That's right.
Which, you gotta, if you're a collector, you gotta have that.
And don't leave out who they're personally signed by as well.
Yeah.
I mean, we signed them.
We signed them. But Colonel Sanders himself, folks, also signed the bucket.
That's right.
So, he's a good friend of ours, Colonel Sanders. A lot of people seem to think he died. He's just hiding out.
No, he's not dead. He's fine. Talk to him every day.
Yeah, he's a good guy. So anyway, that's that. And we're going to have a big announcement on the shirts next week, too, as far as what we're going to do something special for you people. Shirts will be $20 shipped, which I think is a fair price anyway. But, you know, we're going to give you a little something extra with. And we'll get into that next week. And also, it's Turn Back the Clock Week over on YouTube.
Oh, Jesus, God, man, that's right. If you go on
YouTube,
you can check out, and I know of one in particular you can check out, is of me around 2002, and it's Christmas of 2002.
No, it's a white trash Christmas.
You can check that out. And I'm sure that when you do, you'll find that hysterical. And then, I don't know, are you releasing the other from privacy to?
I'll release it.
Then there's another one that I swear to God could quite possibly be one of the funniest fucking things I've ever seen in my life. Of CK, I don't know what year this was. This is, what, 96?
96.
Okay. In his pre-horror days, doing some of his famous freestyle rapping that made him, you know, one of the most sought-after DJs back in the early 90s in Eastern Kentucky.
It's rare footage, folks, and it's exclusive video this week. Thought we'd do something a little bit different, and we'll probably do another video next week as far as, I don't know what we'll do. We'll do something new. So also next week, Angus Scrimm. Boy.
Yeah, one of probably the most looked forward to and awaited interviews that we've done.
That's right.
With a horror fucking icon.
That's right, folks. That's next week. That's part one of the two-part interview with the tall man, Angus Grimm.
Mm-hmm.
So you can look forward to that. And we're not too far away from Friday the 13th.
And you know what that means. There's going to be lots of interviews. There's going to be lots of stuff.
So anyway, until next week, when we're joined in the Dead Pit Studios by Angus fucking Scram.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the Creepy Kentucky.
I am Uncle Bill.
And you've been listening to DeadPitch.com.
Sons of bitches!